From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at Simplified.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
Thomas Becker, my guest today, and I have kind of taken the opposite tack. He is a world-renowned scientist and professor, and I have just started my journey into academia and being a professor at USC Annenberg. So I'm really excited to dive into our topics today and welcome Thomas of Stratify. Thomas, thank you so much for being here today.
Annika, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your journey into entrepreneurship. You've been an academic most of your career. I'm imagining, is that something that you wanted to do? Is it something that you fell into? So if you'll talk about that a little bit and then talk about that transition.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So before I started graduate school at Ohio State University, I was waiting on tables. You know, I had an undergrad degree in psychology, and that basically qualified me to wait on tables. So that's what I did. And then I decided that wasn't something I wanted to do the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So having that background in psychology, I decided to go into industrial organizational psychology, which is basically studying and trying to understand people in the workplace so that you can improve the quality of life of employees and increase or enhance productivity for employers. So it's not that we're on one side or the other. We want everything to function well. And so that deals with things like, well, human resource management topics like hiring, training, performance management, and compensation, just as examples. So I intentionally went to school. I was there for 5 years, got my PhD, came out. My first gig was at Washington State University out in Pullman, Washington, the Cougars. And we were there for about 5 years. We had my son, Charlie, 2 years into it. And we were a long way from family. So I took a job at University of Delaware, was there for 20 years. All along the way, I was doing consulting because it kind of went hand in hand with my job. You know, I study things like, in addition to those HR topics, leadership and motivation and group dynamics. And a lot of times I would be teaching a class, let's say executive MBAs, and somebody would come up after class and go, wow, you know, my company's having a lot of trouble with job dissatisfaction and turnover's high. And would you be willing to work with us on that? So those kind of consulting jobs, I'll say almost in a way, fell in my lap. I mean, I was certainly happy to have those jobs, and I picked up more and more as I went. And sometimes it kind of went hand in hand. You can have a consulting job that turns into a research opportunity, which then can be turn into an academic paper. So the two complemented each other very well. And then when I finished at the University of South Florida, I decided to go into consulting full time. And that was just this past May, Annika. I started this company called Stratify, LLC, and I've been doing that since then. And it's been going well. It's a lot of work, as you can imagine. Just like I heard, it's a lot of work. It's different doing it full time than it was doing it as kind of a side gig. But I'm loving it. It's something that I'm passionate about because you're not just teaching something out of a book. You're actually trying to help people improve their organization. So I rambled on quite a bit there, but that's a little bit about my background.
Well, what I want to say is I appreciate the fact that you were doing consulting the whole time that you were also teaching, because I think sometimes there's that barrier of the PhDs who, yes, are doing research, but also might not be in the practice every day, right? And then professors of the practice, like myself, who my day job is working in the field, and then I'm able to take those concepts to my students because I teach at UC Annenberg in two master's degree programs.
That's great.
So, but I appreciate the fact that you're lifting that up and that the whole time you weren't just living in academia land and research and this is theory. Yeah. You know, you were actually, you had the practical application for your students as well. And you could see what was going on for the future of work and what the trends were at different times in our lives.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting that there's that kind of disconnect between science and practice? You would think they go hand in hand, you know, science, behavioral scientists are studying new things, new tools, new applications, new theories that are relevant to understanding behavior in the workplace. The practitioners are in a position to work with those scientists to collect data that's useful to them. But, you know, I came to understand that a lot of times it's just that those two populations of people travel in different worlds, don't they? Mm-hmm. You know, the scientists, I got to publish, you know, I want to get tenured if I want a tenure track situation. And the practitioners, they want to put out fires. They need to focus, you know, really on what's in front of them. And the reward system is very different for the two camps. But it really is beautiful when they come together. I've had that happen a number of times on projects. And now that I've got this background and this interest in Stratify, I can really see how they complement each other, science and practice, that is.
Fantastic. So you've moved around a few times and worked with companies in different areas. Before we get into Stratify and entrepreneurship and all of that side, I'd love to hear, when you were consulting, what were some of the common themes that you saw between the different companies that you were trying to help?
Yeah, you know what? I think if I had to pick one and only one, I'll give you more than one since you said themes at the floor.
Yeah.
But the number one that jumps out at me is a lot of companies have trouble hiring people effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so especially I would say small and medium-sized firms, because a lot of times they're still kind of making these important hiring decisions on the basis of unstructured interviews that aren't linked to job descriptions. They're based on kind of first impressions a lot of times. Biases come into play because there's no standardized questions or rating format. So, you know, that's so common. And so it's not hard to understand. You end up with these so-called type one and type two errors where a company hires somebody that they shouldn't, or they don't hire somebody that they should, and that person goes to work for a competitor and ends up, you know, coming back to haunt them in the future. But yeah, so I think that's something that I've seen in many organizations. Happens in large organizations too, but just trying to give a little evidence-based practice to those small organizations that, you know, it can really hurt them if they end up hiring even one or two people that don't work out. It can be almost the death knell for them. So that's one major theme. I think another major theme is managing performance and what that means. Yeah. Now, in the old days, it was just called performance appraisal, and you meet with your boss once or twice a year, and they give you kind of the praise, criticism, praise sandwich. Hey, you're doing a great job. Here's some stuff you need to do better. And then, hey, you know, we'll see you next year. And that just doesn't really cut it anymore, especially in the remote world.
Right.
So, yeah, that's something a lot of people are wrestling with, and I think can be done much better. So that's the two that come off the top of my head. There's others for sure, like compensation and recruitment, but that's the two that come to my mind most quickly.
Yeah. Well, I will say I've definitely experienced both of those issues myself on both sides of being an employee, but also employing people and being a small business, making those quick decisions. I need to ramp up, but not really thinking through, do I really need to ramp up and who do I really need to hire? Or hiring somebody based on what you think they could do and then finding that their capacity is actually very different. It might be something that you need, but it might not be. And
yes,
so
figuring
out. And I also think when I have been an employee, It's interesting to see how much time it takes to figure out, like, you go into something, right? Everybody, it's like dating. Everybody's putting their best face forward. You think that you have matching values and goals. And then you might get into an organization and realize, oh, this actually isn't the right opportunity for me. Or the kind of people that they work with are not the ones that match up with my values, or any number of issues. And I'm seeing this more and more in the workforce as well with my students and the younger generations who really, you know, they might say, oh, this company is espousing their B Corp, they're espousing these ESG values. And then getting into an organization, realizing that they're really not doing as much intentional work as somebody might think from the outside.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I think you mentioned both parties really putting their best foot forward. And that can lead to a sense of violated expectations on the part of the new employee who thought it was going to be all, you know, magic and love. And it turns out, like, no, there's just a lot of drudgery work, too. So there is a guy, his name was John Warnes. He's retired now at Ohio State, who for years studied this notion of realistic job previews. And the idea there was, yeah, you know, you want to leave a general overall positive impression on the people that are applying for jobs, because they could, you know, end up being customers later on, or, you know, whatever. But it's really important to give them a realistic sense of the job as well. So there would be, John will work with companies to develop sort of a template that included, you know, maybe here's three things that we need to tell people about this job, so that when they end up doing it, it's no huge surprise, and then they end up leaving pretty quick, you know? It's also a way to kind of allow people to screen themselves out if they see that those, say, three things aren't, you know, that's a total turnoff for them. They screen themselves out instead of being hired and then, you know, a month later, they quit and you've got those turnover costs, really, for both the employer and now former employee. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea, realistic job previews.
What are some ways that people can put together realistic job previews, particularly for the, there are so many small businesses created every day, right? There are a lot of people, not unlike yourself, who are coming out of a career that they've had for a length of time, and now they want to do something different and maybe start their own company, but they haven't had the experience. Maybe they've been a manager, they've gone through the process in the context of their previous employer of being part of the hiring process, but now they're responsible for everything.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know, the first thing to do to create a good realistic job preview is to really understand the job. And one of the things I think sometimes happens too, I'm very kind of sensitive to this because I've experienced it firsthand, is, you know, you start your business and everything cranks up to 100 miles per hour real quick, you know, if you're lucky. And so, but it's important to take the time to do some very basic fundamental tasks carefully. One of those is creating a good job description for the jobs that you have in your business. Now, if you're just starting and it's you and it's kind of a sole proprietorship, you know, no problem. But as soon as you start hiring people and they've got jobs different than you, then you really need to understand what they're doing. You know, what are the primary tasks, duties, or responsibilities of that job?
Right.
And once you do that, once you've got that kind of summary of what the job's all about, then you can scan that and say, okay, so what's kind of, are there any parts of that job that are kind of unpleasant, or at least things that, you know, not everybody's going to jump up and down about, you know? It might be, let's say, as an entrepreneur, if I had a job description for an entrepreneur, one of the downsides would be, you know, you're totally responsible financially for the firm. Another part of it is you're going to have to face risk pretty much every day. Another part is you've got to figure out what your work-life balance is going to be. So, you know, if I were creating a realistic job preview for entrepreneurs, I'd say, well, you know, you should be aware of this. You know, you're going to go into it. There's definitely an upside. You know, you decide what you're going to do. You love this business because you've created it. You've got considerable control over it. But you do need to be aware of the downsides, too. So, yeah, that's the key thing, is having a job description and then communicating honestly with job applicants, not just trying to paint it, you know, this is a bad job, obviously, but giving them a balanced perspective. And most people are mature enough that they know, Well, the reason the company's paying me is, you know, there's going to be some parts of the job I'm not crazy about, because if I absolutely love doing this every day, I'd pay them. You know what I mean?
True.
Yeah,
very true. Oh my gosh. Well, I'd love to hear what it was like to make that transition from consulting to having an LLC, starting a full business with employees and putting yourself out there in a very different way.
Yeah, I can tell you about that because this just happened in May.
Yeah.
I'd been in academia for 30 plus years, like I said, doing consulting along the way. I think what made that transition a little smoother than it would have otherwise been is, you know, I know what it's like to be a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of know the business of consulting and working with people on areas that I understand and being able to communicate with them techniques that they can use to do a better job, for example, hiring or compensating employees or developing a leadership program or managing people and so on. So that part of it's not that hard. I think the toughest thing in the transition is most people going into opening their own small business, they're not experts in marketing.
Right.
You know, so that's a huge issue. So, okay, so how do I get in touch with those people that are interested in or need my products and services? And, you know, I think speaking for myself, I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I mean, very quickly. One was thinking like, okay, I'm going to buy this big list of small business owners and managers. I'm going to use a fancy program and write these emails to them. It's got their first name. It's got their business. It's kind of personalized in some way. I'm going to send that out, you know, let's say to 1,000 people. And well, I don't know, maybe I'll only get 10%, but that's 100 clients.
Yeah.
And what you end up actually with is 0% because nobody's interested in hearing from somebody that they've never heard from before. And, you know, it just goes into the trash file real quick. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I learned. Another thing I learned is, you know, you got to be kind of wary about which marketing experts you connect yourself to. They can offer good ideas. I mean, the honest ones can offer you good ideas, but you got to keep your eye on the ball, which is, okay, how much am I paying for this marketing specialist versus when and how much is that turning into sales dollars? I mean, there's got to be money coming in as a result. That's, you know, that's really the only metric most of us care about in small businesses. Yeah, it's nice about number of clicks and how many followers and all this stuff. But if it doesn't turn into dollars at some point, you're going to be out of business. So yeah, just finding the approach that works for you and your business, I think, was the most critical aspect of the transition. And that's something I'm still working on. I use Upwork a lot because that's a way to get a hold of people or have people get a hold of you who are looking for something specific to your field. So mm-hmm. you're not reaching out to 1,000 people and 999 of them have no need for your services. These are people that are on Upwork because they're seeking your services. I know I'm kind of marketing Upwork there, but I know there's other platforms as well that are very popular. I think Freelancer is another one.
Okay, interesting. I've had other guests also mention that they get a lot of work through Upwork. And so yep. I think that's something we don't think about a lot. To your point, you can cold call all day. You can spend money with advertising dollars. You can do all these other techniques. But if you can put something on a website like Upwork and you already have, you know, you're established, you have testimonials, you have things that you can share about the way that you work, then the right person can just say, oh, yeah, they can go through maybe 5 profiles and say, yeah, this is the one I want to work with.
Yeah. Oh. You know what happened to me recently, Annika, was when I first started on Upwork, you know, you build a little profile, kind of like on LinkedIn, only more kind of more focused on the specific work that you do. So I'm reaching out and seeking people and I'm getting work and some people are going to somebody else and I'm getting some work and that's great. But then after you've been around a little bit while and your profile starts to build out because you're getting like these testimonials or, you know, all 5-star ratings and things like that. All of a sudden, this just happened within the last month, I started getting invitations for interviews for people that found me. And I just think, you know, it's just the process of the networking that occurs automatically when people are seeking out experts in a particular field, and you're seeking out people. Pretty soon, it's all part of a kind of a system, and they start finding you. And then you've got some credibility and you build some trust because they can see, okay, you've already done, you know, whatever, a dozen projects, and everybody's happy with you and so on.
Yeah.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I love that. And you're just reminding me that that's something I should check out again.
Yeah.
For myself, my business.
You know what? You just pick up these things. I got to give a shout out to my son, Charlie, actually, who told me about Upwork and Freelancer and these different platforms. Mm-hmm. He started his own business a couple of years ago in digital marketing. Two of his friends started, and they just had a $2 million year last year. They hired their 35th employee.
Wow.
And I was telling him all my troubles about, wow, I don't know how to find people. And he said, well, you should check out these sites. And I did. So yeah, it helps to have somebody who's kind of gone through it for you and is willing to share.
Absolutely. So I want to go back to the world of academia. You been ranked among the top 2% researchers in the world. Am I saying
that
correctly?
And so that's true.
What does that mean? And congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, this was actually a big surprise to me because, you know, I was just doing my work, doing my job. And I think it was 2 years ago, Stanford has this list that they put together of the top 2% of scientists in the world, at research scientists in the world. And there's like 7 million.
Oh my gosh.
Us, which is like, wow, that's a lot of folks, you know? So they go in and they look at your Google Scholar profile, ResearchGate profile, and they collect data on the number of publications that you have, the quality of the journals in which you're publishing, whether you're first author, third author, whatever. And I'm not sure exactly what their algorithm is, but they balance those things, you know, basically the quantity and quality of your work. And then they put together, it's basically just a big Excel file of the top 2%. And I got a call from the guy that was the dean of the Amuma College of Business at University of South Florida and said, wow, you know, congratulations. And I was like, do I get a big bonus? And he's like, no.
Darn.
But, you know, to be fair, a lot of the people on that list are academics, you know, because they're the ones, obviously, that are getting, well, it's part of our job, a key part of our job to do that research and to publish. So somebody can be great outside of academics, but they're not necessarily incented to publish or, you know, they're busy doing other things. So, but yeah, it was a nice recognition.
Yeah. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt to be able to say that when you're talking about the work that you're doing now. So let's dive into that. Let's talk about what kind of clients you work with and what kind of process you take them through. Is it different for everybody? Do you have a baseline that you start with and then you build out customized, you know, options for each of them?
You know, this is the thing that I like most about the full-time consulting right now is every job so far has been quite different. You know, the span of things that you deal with are remarkably different. So, for example, one job might have to do with making marketing materials compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I really sunk my teeth into understanding Title III of the ADA and what it says and implies for marketing materials and how you can make it compliant. So that's one very specific application of my level of expertise, because it has something to do with employment law. And of course, employment law, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
Employment law is a big part of HR, because you've got to be aware of that so that when you're hiring or promoting people, you're not breaking those laws. Then you might have a job dealing with interpersonal conflict among top managers. So then in that case, you're kind of playing mediator, trying to work it out.
Wow.
Sometimes it feels like you're, you know, you're a third grade teacher. It's like you guys are like experts in your fields, but you just don't like each other. So that's, you know, almost like a coaching type job.
Nope.
And mediating. Yeah. And then some of it is somebody comes with you and they don't have a specific issue. They just know they want to grow, and they know they've got a sense that, okay, we've started to grow, and now I've got a bunch of employees that I didn't have before, and I'm not sure how to organize everything. I'm not sure what are the next steps. And a lot of that is HR related. You know, what's the best way to recruit people? Where do I go to find the right kinds of people? How do I hire people? And I know there's such a thing as a market rate of pay, but where do you go to find out exactly what that rate of pay is?
Well,
so very practical, very focused on helping the firm survive and thrive. And I think when folks come to you at that level, where it's just a general, I'm not sure what to do, but I know I need some help, it's almost like being a therapist. And I don't mean that in any sort of condescending way to the client. I mean that a lot of times when somebody comes to you and you're a therapist, the issue or problem that they come to you with oftentimes is not the real issue.
Okay.
You've got to dig into it and find out, okay, so the issue they're coming to me with is they've got high turnover. That's my problem. How can we deal with the turnover? Then you dig into it and it's like, actually, you got kind of a cultural problem. Values and your policies and procedures and the leadership style, you know, those are the real fundamental things. The turnover is just a symptom of that.
Right.
So that's almost like a Sherlock Holmes kind of issue of figuring out what the real problem is and trying to address it.
Yeah. And I know you just started, but so you missed some of the, you know, COVID era people trying to figure out, but I feel like we're still in that era of trying to figure out what the future of work looks like with remote work, hybrid work, people going back in person. We've had so many employees go on strike because, you know, they want to make sure that they're getting fair wages and that they have some kind of balance in their lives. So what do you see with all of the work that you've done and the research as some key things that we need to be thinking of as employers over the next, you know, 5, 10 plus years.
Sure. Yeah. You know, this is a really interesting contemporary issue, is what do you do about the norms for remote work that evolved through the pandemic? And as you probably know, a number of employers have just said, you're coming back. That's it. You know, we work here in this office space. And, you know, that was then and now is now, and you're coming back. And employees, at least a good chunk of them, kind of resist that. If they need the job, maybe they go back. But if they're high performers and they can find another employer who will allow them either hybrid work or work entirely from home, that's where they'll go. So I think employers have to be a little careful about pulling the trigger on that issue. You really have to dig into, you know, what your employees' needs and preferences are. And I think the most important thing is what is possible based on the nature of the job. You know, to me, the first reasonable step is should Joe or should Mary work from home? Well, let's look at their job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible that some parts of the job, let's say administrative parts of their job, they could do at home. They don't have to be in the office. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, maybe there's parts to a particular job where they have to interact with clients, and it's better if they do that face-to-face because then they can, you know, have a richer communication, can read body language better and establish, you know, a stronger rapport. So that, to me, makes a lot more sense than just whatever we want to do as employers, or conversely, going the other way. Well, let's just do whatever the employees want. The real question is, what's in the best interest of the organization, and taking a kind of methodical approach to the issue rather than purely philosophical one. I think you could tell a lot about the inclination of the leadership style by how they address that issue. If you have an authoritarian leader, they're going to go, hey, we're going to do it my way or the highway. If you've got an overly permissive leader, it's like, hey, whatever you guys want to do, you know, I just want you to be happy. But, you know, I think most people are mature enough to say, what we'd really like is kind of a rational leader who understands, yes, our well-being is very important. They care about us, but the work's got to get done. Quality, you know, is job one. And if I need to be there to accomplish these tasks, then, you know, that's what I'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking, we're on Zoom right now, and I've read that Zoom demanded that people be back in the office, which is ironic.
I hadn't heard that, but that's a good one.
Yeah. You have a big passion also for helping small businesses as a core part of your values, your mission. What does that mean to you? And what does that look, you know, does that look different than when you're working with larger organizations?
Yeah, you know, the reason I really care about working with small businesses is most small businesses and even medium-sized firms just don't have the same level of help as a big business. I interned when I was in graduate school at Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, and they had a whole staff of five people, all of whom had PhDs, and all they did all day, every day, was design selection tests, evaluate training, and do very targeted HR stuff. And, you know, obviously a small business is not going to be able to do that. But they can probably afford to hire an HR consultant to come in and either put out fires or hopefully help them develop a strategy so the fires don't occur in the first place. So, yeah, I think that's why I feel really passionate about that. Another aspect to it is, I don't want to badmouth anybody, honestly, but I do know that there's some consultants out there who are a little bit on the scam-ish side. There's some really great ones. And then there's ones who they come and they've got some kind of canned package they want to sell you on. We've got this training program. We're going to send everybody through it. They don't do a needs assessment. They don't do a training evaluation. They just want to go in, run the program, and, you know, get out of Dodge. So that really rubs me the wrong way. My hope is that Stratify can serve small and medium-sized enterprises in such a way that, you know, they can afford us. And they're going to get quality help. And oftentimes that'll mean evidence-based choices rather than just, you know, flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I think we would all be better served to have those kind of systems in place when we start our companies because many of us fly by the seat of our pants. And then later on, we're like, oh gosh, now what? Look at this web I have to untangle. And look at these mistakes that I've made along the way that now are costing me more money. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, I'm just going to look around for a second and see if I heard that book handy. I did have a really nice little book on starting a small business that a friend of mine, John Cabungo, gave me when I finished at the University of South Florida. And I'll have to maybe text you or send you the information on it. But there are some really good, very readable books out there on things to look out for. This particular book, the one thing I remember very clearly about it is the metaphor was a small business is like an airplane. In the cockpit, you got the leaders, and then one wing is marketing, the other wing is operations, and then the two engines and the tail are different things, HR and so on. And everything's got to kind of work together so you don't crash and burn, because if one thing's way off, it's going to be trouble. So yeah, I think there's a number of books like that, and there's certainly consultants around who can, especially if you meet with them early on, can help you sidestep the usual pitfalls.
Fantastic. And if somebody were going to your website, are there resources available for them to get to know you a little bit more and be able to kind of play around on their own?
Yeah, you bet. So you might know this, but we're at www.stratify.us. And if you get on there, you'll be able to see some of our major products and services. One of the first things you'll see is a red button you can click to contact me. We've got 6 associates at Workforce as well and a number of affiliates. So I certainly don't know everything, but we put together a team that can address most issues that most businesses face. And you can schedule a free consultation with me and we can get the ball rolling. So and you can look around on that site all you want. We've got a video on the first page that you might watch. It's only like a minute long, but it tells you about the company and our major strategies. So yeah, I invite you and all your members of your audience to check it out if you're interested.
Great. And I will put the link in the show notes. So when you built your team, is your team virtual? Are you all in person? Is it a mix?
Yeah, so the 7 of us, there's 6 associates and me, honestly, I've known a couple of them and have met them and worked with them. 3 of them are academics, so we have seen each other and worked with each other from time to time. The other 3 I found because I was looking for people with specific types of knowledge so that we could cover, you know, the gaps that we were not otherwise covering. And yeah, so the way it works now is if a client has a particular issue and there's somebody on the team who's a particular expert on that, then that's the person who's going to take the lead. You know, if somebody's got an employee retention problem or anticipates having such a problem, I know, okay, I'm going to this guy for that. Yeah. So, and putting a good team together, I think, is a real challenge. And it's especially a challenge when you're working with freelancers because you don't have like some sort of typical power authority over people. They've got to see a good reason to work with you. They have to have some drive of their own. I think intrinsic motivation becomes really important, but that's the bottom line for me is putting together a team of people who A, have the expertise and B, are truly motivated to help the client.
Yeah, fantastic. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think people need to be cognizant of as they're thinking about their journey in entrepreneurship, building up their teams?
You know, I would just say this. This is going to be a little on the philosophical side, but I would say, you know, there's a lot of places you can go to get help with technical things. And there's issues with that, finding the right person, the right tool and all that. But the key thing is being persistent. Sounds corny. I know you hear this from a lot of angles, but really just being committed to your course of action, not necessarily to the specific tactic or strategy, but to your vision. And it's real easy to get discouraged if things aren't going as well as you were hoping, which is typically the case. You know, people go in, I'm going to be rich in a year. It's like, okay, you know, if it was that easy, everybody would be rich. So go into it. Maybe we need realistic job previews for all of us going here. But but really that persistent effort, even in the face of some setbacks or, you know, not going as fast as you want at time X, that to me is the key. That's the driver of everything else. You can find solutions to almost any other problem. But if you give up, you know, that's the end of the story. So.
Yeah.
Keep on trucking, folks.
Thank you. It's been such a delight. I can tell how much joy you get out of the work that you do and helping people structure things so that everybody can be successful. So I love that. I'm so happy that we got to meet. And Tom, I do want to know, do you have a favorite quote, a mantra, some words of wisdom that you live by?
Let's see. I do, actually. It's only 2 words. Finish strong. So, yeah. It's funny you asked that. That came out of left field, but it just right away brought that to my mind because last year I was sitting down. It's like, okay, so I'm still working as a college professor. I know that the end of my tenure there is coming up. What am I going to do next? Some people just retire and play golf. I can't bring myself to play golf every day. That I need a purpose, you know. Leisure is great. Leisure is great, but it's not the central purpose for me. So, yeah, that was kind of my epiphany back in January, where it's like, well, what do I, just bottom line, what do I want? And it's just, hey, finish strong, you know. You don't have to turn 60, 65, whatever somebody might be, and go, I'm retired. As long as you have something that you care about and are passionate about, you're not retired. You're not retired because you are working hard on something. It may not be the same thing, but as long as you have a purpose, you continue to move forward.
Fantastic. Tom Becker, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you to my audience. I know I got a lot of great information, and I'm really excited to think about new approaches to how I work with people, whether I'm an employee or the employer. So I know all of you got a lot of value out of this too, as you're thinking about your businesses. I'll be back again in a few days with another amazing expert to help you propel your business forward. Until then, have a wonderful week.
Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at @AmplifyWithAnnika.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with a design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.